שלום, 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 ברוכים הבאים, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the night of Purim. It is Saturday night, Motzei Shabbat, on March 23rd, 2024. Here it's pretty late in Haaretz, in Israel, around 11:38 p.m. To all of you still observing Shabbat, and we'll watch this later, welcome to all of you who are joining right now in Haaretz, in Israel, or any time zone in Europe, throughout Africa, welcome. And for those of you on the next day, already celebrating Purim in the morning or elsewhere, whether you're in Australia, New Zealand, any of the Southeast Asian countries, welcome. We are delighted to have you. I am Rabbi Chasu Uriel Steinbauer, the founder and director of the Institute for Holiness, Kehilat Musar Mindfulness, where we take the ancient wisdoms of the Dharma from Theravada Buddhism and Musar, in the Jewish tradition, from our ancestors and from God, to really be on this path to become the finest, best version of ourselves in order to bring God's good to others. So it's quite a privilege to be here with you on the night of Purim. I am feeling deeply vulnerable, full of tears 1 minute and joy the next, because this is a very joyous celebration holiday, but it's also deeply sad because so many of our people are still captive, kidnapped in the tunnels, in houses, in Gaza, being held by Palestinian civilians and also Hamas and Islamic Jihad, basically Islamist terrorists. So there's such pain, fear, all mixed together. And so we try to, in these ancient traditions, learn that can we be with both? Can we be with the pain and also the appreciative joy that we are alive and given another day? So with that, we're going to enter today's session. We are behind, as you know. It's been quite a winter. We are covering today, still back in the book of Shemot, Vayakhel, and then we will cover Pekudei, and then we'll be up to Vayikra, which we just had today earlier. So thank you for your patience. I promise you I will attempt to work on it this week. So we always start with our kavanah, our intention for today's session, which is always the same how we practice this. I share screen with you for those of you who have vision, or excuse me, are joining us on video, live streaming on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel. Please do subscribe. And you're also welcome to join the blog live at our website at kehilatmusar.com. You will find both audio and video there for these sessions that we meet once a week, Bezrat Hashem, sometimes more when I have to catch up. Where we look at the weekly Torah portion from the Hebrew Bible of how Jews read the weekly Torah portion throughout the whole year. So as I said, we are in the book of Shemot, trying to finish the last two Torah portions known as Parshiot, and finish this up and enter Vayikra, Leviticus. So thank you for joining today. So what are we going to cover before I enter the Kavanot? For those of you following, so if you are in the actual Torah, you want to be in Exodus chapter 35, Pasuk 1, verse 1, Aleph, through chapter 38, Pasuk 20, which would be Kaf. And that will cover Vayakhel, which took place on March 9th. And it took place on Kaf Tet of Adar Aleph, back in the 29th of Adar Aleph, which you might be wondering, wow, that was a while ago. We're in Adar Bet right now. So Before I jump into our Kavanot and our attention for today, I want to thank our sponsors for today's session. We have a new member of the Institute for Holiness. Let's welcome Olga Nazarova, coming from Ramat Gan outside of Tel Aviv. Welcome so much for joining us. Looking forward to connecting and getting to know you, Olga, and also connecting with the Jillian Holiday, one of our great, deeply committed practitioners of Musar mindfulness. She's been in a Musar Vod with me for years now, and she is always so generous, giving whenever she can. And so today, both women are sponsoring today's session. So thank you so much, really, from deep in my heart. If you too want to sponsor this session or any session, be in touch. We take them in honor of somebody, in memory of someone. So we're delighted to receive your support. On to our kavanot, our intention. So for those of you who are listening by podcast or audio, you'll hear me just read through these, which these are the same as they are every week, right? So we really see this time together during awakening as an act of radical self-care. Also, we're also doing this for others and also to strengthen our relationship with the divine, okay? So we say this is something I'm doing to strengthen my own soul in order to be of benefit to others in the future. And I'm doing this also to strengthen my relationship to others so they can be a better conduit of God's good when they need us. And finally, we're doing this to strengthen our relationship with God, however you define God or that relationship. Very important that we take definitive steps to strengthen that relationship. We'll be covering that actually in Vayikra, because you might be wondering, what are we going to talk about in Vayikra when we talk about the Korbanot, which we suppose, we don't have today. We have something very important to teach us about how to actually be seeking out God daily, right? Karov, drawing near, is in the word korbanot, which are these sacrificial offerings we used to offer both in the Mishkan and also in the temple, the tabernacle in the wilderness, and in the Beit Mikdash, the temples, the temple that so for the, in Shiloh, Shiloh in Hebrew, it was first the tabernacle and then the Beit Mikdash. So we'll get to that, the Zrat Hashem, as soon as we can get through these two. So these are our kavanot, our intentions for today. May we merit this. May we merit really fulfilling these. We really want to take our path in this practice of Musar mindfulness seriously, joining a group that's with a master teacher to really support ourselves so that we really can make a difference both in our own personal lives, how we treat others, and one day at a time, really trying to make this world a better place. So, why Vayakhel, right? What do our ancestors want us to learn from this? What is God? Why is this recorded? Why is this given to us? And especially now, especially in when we're really looking at all of these parshiyot in response to the genocide of October 7th in Israel and the ongoing captivity and kidnapping of our people, and also our residents of Israel, the ongoing war and the missiles, just everything, right? So we want to take really refuge in the Torah, in the text, and take from it what we're supposed to learn to strengthen us, to cope, for some of us to heal and recover. Really, one day at a time. So, what happens here? So, all these four final parshiyot, Tetzaveh, Kitisa, and Pekudei, are all covering the tabernacle, building it, what goes in it, who's giving, who's designing. Therefore, right? I think back to one of my beloved Hufrutot, Joel Goldstein, posted recently that. He really just has a hard time connecting with these four parshiyot because they're just all about building the tabernacle. And I think I used to feel that way until I realized, I looked a bit at the history of the actual tabernacle, And this tabernacle served our people for 500 years. They brought it with them over the Arden, over the Jordan, into our land and to our ancestral land. It was in Shiloh. It served, like when we think of Hannah going and praying, right? Where she's whispering quietly to herself, where we get how to pray the Amidah, the silent prayer. She is doing that in the tabernacle. It's phenomenal. That's absolutely, when we think back to Batsael and Oholiab and all of our ancestors who gave so much, they had to be told to stop giving. They gave of their heart and everything to build this tabernacle. That was for generations to come. It wasn't just about them. It wasn't just about their children or even their grandchildren. When we hear stories, for instance, from Native Americans saying that they have this practice of thinking to the 25th generation, this is something like the tabernacle. This is going to serve our people for 500 years. Phenomenal. Just beautiful and amazing. If anything, I think it's more beautiful and more humble than the Beit Mikdash. It's so, first of all, it's created with our ancestors, their human hands, with the skill given to them by God, and even through their own audacity and creativity, with from their own spirit and their willingness to learn new skills and to do. And they built that together as a place to say, Hashem, come and be with us, right? We want to serve you here. We want to have a community center here. This is where we will gather. That's phenomenal. That's very different than the Beit Mikdash, is this huge stone monument. So I find it beloved. I've really connected with these four Pashiot. So what happens here in Vayikra? So at the beginning of it, Bnei Israel, our ancestors, the children of Israel, donate all the supplies needed for the construction of the Mishkan, the sanctuary for God. Precious metals, gold, silver, and copper, nechoshet, materials of shesh, which you think of that word, you think, oh, it means the number six. It also meant linen, okay? And izim, goat's hair, this wool in different colors, techelet, and argaman, and tolaat, shani, these beautiful purples and reds and blue. And then skins from rams and from an animal, actually, that we really don't know what this animal is. It's called a tahash. And then wood and oil and spices and precious stones. And they gave willingly, they gave with their heart. They gave so much, they had to be told to stop. And that's phenomenal. If anything, I think of who we are right now. We are giving and giving and giving, giving with our hearts, giving what we can, whether that's money, volunteering, time, our labor, our hands, anything to help bring the hostages back, anything to defeat Hamas and other Islamist terrorists, anything to make it so our borders are safe and something like October 7th never happens again. This is not a small task, just like it wasn't a small task for them to build this Mishkan, especially coming out of the golden calf, right? They had such intention of having Moshe and God and drawing near. You can go off the path when you're so attached, right? When you're so attached and attached to a certain way of things being, you can go off the derech. You can get lost, right? You've lost the ability to be able to pivot, to be able to go, okay, what's plan B? If I can't go forward with this plan, which involved Moshe, who was up in the mountain, isn't coming down, and we don't know who's leading us, and we don't know where God is, right? You have to have a plan B. And so their plan B just was this not what was desired and wanted, right? And we too. What are we going to learn from today's Parsha? We have to start thinking of plan B, plan C, whatever creativity. So let's find out why we're going to learn this today. Okay, so let me briefly look at my notes how I want to lead us. So what we see here, first of all, is a new model of leadership. Up until now, leadership was selected first with Moshe and even before with Abraham and so forth, was maybe with Abraham, maybe it was merit and wisdom, maybe it just happened to be that he stood up, like the Midrashim, that he stood up to his father and idol worship. We don't know, okay? But it wasn't something of what we call hereditary rule, right? No, there was no one before Avram. That's not why God selected him. Similarly, when Moshe comes along, it's a similar thing. We can guess why he was selected, but we're not told in the Torah. And so once you have Moshe, though, there is definitely the Levites, the Levi, clan, and then you start to have Aharon, who's going to be the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and then his sons. And everything's going to be passed down through hereditary leadership and rule. And so you have that type of leadership that's being solidified. All of a sudden, you now have a new leader emerging here, a new form of leadership that is selected by God, commanded to Moshe to address the people, and that is selected based on what seems to be merit and wisdom, although it seems to be given and supported by God. What I think we're going to glean from when I start talking about this individual is it might not so much be merit and wisdom as it is his zerizut, his really balanced midah of enthusiasm, where in Musar practice, enthusiasm involves two things. One, that you have to really consider what it is that you're going to do. You have to think about it, plan it out, have wise discernment. And then once you have figured that out and not be frozen by it at all, you are to move forward with zeal. You've made up your mind, go, act, do the deed. And this is what he does. And through that behavior and modeling it, worthy of teaching, worthy of being of emulation, modeling this for the other Israelites, they join in, they help out, they assist. This is what makes him worthy. And Hashem, God, most likely knew that. Did we know it ahead of time? We don't know. We know. And who is this individual? Betzael, beautiful name, in the shadow of God. Literally, what God gives and does goes through Betzael, right? He's able to discern and decide things, have courage, really just willing to jump in with both feet. He also has Oholiab, who also has been selected to do this building of the tabernacle, and they're both worthy of emulation and teaching. Okay, so we have this new leadership emerging, and this will be the first time that God will dwell among humans since the Garden of Eden. That's really profound. Generations later, right? We have Gan Eden, we have Adam and Chava. 10 generations later, we have Noach. 10 generations later, we have Avram. How many generations later, we're now having Moshe? Maybe it's another 10. I'm losing my math. This is profound. This is profound because what you have, in a sense, through human hands, just like Moshe was the one that had to create the second Luchot, the second tablets of the 10 utterances, what is called the 10 commandments in the West. He had to build and do with his own hands, and our people had to build the next Gan Eden, the home of where Hashem, God, will dwell with them if they are worthy, if they're following the laws, if they are worthy of having God among the Kahal, among the community. Very profound. Okay, so that's out there. If you look at chapter 37, Verse one, I just want to point out one thing about him that might assist us. It says right here, let me find the verse. Let's see what I had a Rashi I wanted to share with you, and I can't find it now. It'll come up. Don't worry, we will find it. maybe it was 36 one. Let me look. Because sometimes Rashi, and I'm trying to find the pasuk for you so that you can see the words Asher Natan Adonai Chokmah. Okay, God gives them Chokmah, wisdom, right, to do this work. But I'm trying to share this one section that Rashi comments on, where he says, and he says it's coming from chapter 37, Pasuk 1, verse 1, but I don't see it in verse 1. So it has to be here somewhere. And you know what? If I come up with it, I'll list it later. But what does he say? There's a section where it says that Betzael Shenatan Nafsho. Right, he gives of his life. What does this mean? He gives of his life. He gives of his spirit, right? He's willing to really just jump in. This is really profound. So let's think about who we're dealing with here. We're dealing with former slaves that gave all they could. Right? These are the people that probably did not have necessarily a certain skill set, except for a few slaves here and there were sectioned out to do so. They definitely did not have the knowledge to create a Mishkan, right? And Betzalel is able to lead them to engage with new experiences, new skills. And it's through their generous, charitable hearts and donation where they gave and they gave and they gave so much. Moshe was like, you have to stop, right? This move, this actually gave courage to Betzael and Oholiab, like this real sense of like, wow. You know, when people just blow your mind and then you're like, I can do this. I have the courage to give too. I can, even if I don't have the skills or experience, I'm going to try this. This is what we're witnessing in Israel and all the people who are coming from abroad to volunteer and help here. They're all like so blown away by the courage of the survivors of October 7th, of the soldiers who have survived their service and duty, some coming back completely wounded. We have over 5,000, I believe, who have either limbs that are no longer with them or are injured in some way. We have 27% of the population suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And yet, these people are so courageous. They're getting up and they're doing, and they're loving and they're opening and they're mourning and they're sharing, and it's blowing everyone away. Everyone's like, God, if they can get up and do this, I can get up and do this. I'm gonna help them. I'm gonna get up for those two babies, right? The Bibas family, right? I'm gonna get up each morning to serve them, that they may come home, right? I'm gonna get up for all the hostages. I'm gonna live because they can't right now. That's the spirit. That is Betzael. This is what our ancestors in God wanted us to learn from this amazing Torah portion. This is the gift, right? When they just came from such harsh, awful conditions of being enslaved, out of slavery, making a huge sin and mistake of making the golden calf, having the Levites killing 3,000 of their own brethren. This is already like a massive trauma happening in the Midbar, in the wilderness. And these people are resilient. They might be mourning, they might be in trauma. They're like, I'm going to get up, I'm going to be generous, I'm going to do this, right? It's just amazing. So Betzalel saw this potential. This is his worth. This is his ability. He's able to harness that energy. Right? Without previous experience, even himself, never seen a tabernacle before. He had such intuition and like I said, bravery, right? With this real divine intent. Now he's going to be all of them. Our ancestors and Bezalel are going to be our role model today and as we move forward each day, trying to bring home our people, our hostages, trying to defeat Hamas and other Islamist terrorists. Really. One day at a time. So let's look at one thing very here. What is Purim right now? Purim Sameach to all of you. What does Purim teach us? Purim teaches us that we often walk around with a joy deficit. And we can understand why as Jews. We come from a deep, deep, long history over 2,500 years of collective trauma, transgenerational trauma, and resilience, where we had to learn to have moments of joy. But what that joy and those moments show is that we often walk around a bit with a joy deficit. And that often comes from what also calls it comparing mind. Comparing ourselves to non-Jews, comparing ourselves to Jews in the diaspora, for us Israeli Jews, comparing ourselves to each other, comparing ourselves to our Arab Christian neighbors, our Arab Muslim neighbors, our Druze and Bedouin neighbors. The comparing mind immediately puts us at a deficit. When we think that we need to find something wrong or think that we're lacking or missing something, right? And so we're here to say that we're going to find an appreciative joy from Basael and our ancestors to survive slavery and come out. This daily appreciative joy, sometimes called Hakarat HaTov, recognizing the good, the Midah of gratitude. In order to give us strength to move through this trauma, to move with it, because it's not going to go away. It's part of Betzael. We're in the shadow of it. It's part of our shadow self. It's with us. And it's going to strengthen us over time, right? Not because of that like fuzzy new age idea that like, oh, what didn't kill me made me stronger. No, I'm sorry, it almost killed you. Good enough, but more this sense of like, okay, I have this wound, I have a band-aid, and I'm still getting up and doing. Okay, this is what we can learn from Israelis. It's really profound. So let's look at what we have. Part of it, I want to acknowledge it. Part of my joy and reading into this comes from Rabbi Elizabeth Bahar. Thank you for your reading on Vayakhel. So, what do I want to say to you all? I'm going to share from here. Okay. So, in Tachuma Vayakhel, chapter 4, okay. Also, Rashi on Exodus 38, 22 says, God commanded, so great was Bezalel that he not only acted as Moshe commanded him, but he intuited, I have a hard time saying that. He had intuition, instruction from God that Moshe had not yet conveyed to Batsa. Moshe taught Batsael the order of construction, as is found in chapters 25 and 26 here in Shemot, where the ark is mentioned before the actual structure of the tabernacle, to which Bezalel actually argued. He says that a building, a tabernacle, must be erected before its contents, before the ark. Moshe answered that not only was Bezalel right, his name reflects that he is in the shadow of God. This is a similar commentary that comes in the Babylonian Talmud in Brachot 55a, which I will touch upon right here. I want to bring this to you. It says here in Brachot 55a, I'll translate for you. Moshe, our teacher, it is a universal practice that one builds a house and then brings in the furnishings. But you say, make me an ark, furnishings, and a tabernacle. Where shall I put the furnishings I'm about to make, says Bazael. Can it be that the Holy Blessed One, the Holy One, blessed be he, said to you, make a tabernacle, an ark, and then the furnishings, changing the order? Look at him approach Moshe with such humility. Balance self-esteem, balance anava, the mida of humility, approaches him with, you know, an argument, the Shem Shemayim, for the sake of heaven. Questions, could he have said it that way? Right? Moshe, listen to Moshe's reply. This is where, but Moshe is just beloved to us. Listen to Moshe and how he replies. Perhaps you were in the shadow of God, but Zion, and you knew. Do you hear that answer? Moshe is saying, perhaps I actually heard it wrong. You're right. Actually, everything you're intuiting with your intuition, your gift from God, right? We all have that in here. Bezalel really listened to it. This is gorgeous. You're right, right? That's really profound. Such humility from both of them. Look at this leadership. So gorgeous, right? So Bezalel knew the order of building things. How did he know it? Did he go to school? Did he end up going to Bazael and Yerushalayim, this wonderful art school? No, right? How did he know? He knew the order, the Seder of building things based on how things were built in the real world, in the real world, in Olam Hazeh. And he did not rely solely on the instructions of Moshe. Pay attention to that. He knew an embodied intelligence, one that we have been living for millennia, right? Centuries, looking at how our ancestors lived, passed on. How my parents, how my grandparents, great-grandparents onwards, they built the structure, then they built the things inside of it, right? He knew this from the real world and not, right, and did not rely solely on the instructions from Moshe. This is why this has been handed to us today, surviving October 7th, because this is our plan B and C and D and whatever is needed. We need to go to our embodied intelligence, our intuition, the gift from God, to know this is how things have been done. This is how we survive. This is how we decide to care for and think and plan for not only children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, that the tabernacle lasts for 500 years and then a Beit Mikdash. We too, and how we are going to respond to this war, to this terrorism that is ongoing. That embodied intuition and intelligence, and not necessarily relying solely on the instructions that this is how war is supposed to be. This is what you're supposed to do. This is how war was done in the past, or anything of that sort. This is the gem here that's giving us that same permission and chizuk, the strength to say, we do know how to do this. We've done this before. Our ancestors came out of slavery and had the courage and the intuition and joy, the appreciative joy to say, I'm coming out of that mistake of building the golden calf. Out of that. And I'm going to build this tabernacle. I'm going to help with Sa'il. I'm going to jump in with both feet. Same with us. Some of us may not have any idea how to strategize war, how to deal with Islamist terrorists coming at us from Gaza, from the West Bank, from the North Hezbollah, from the Houthis down near Eilat. Gosh, just craziness, right? We don't have necessarily those instruction booklets. I mean, I don't think any of us do. Here, oh, here's the instruction booklet of how to respond appropriately and wisely. This is going to take collective embodied wisdom, being able to jump in with both feet to intuit, have intuition, to trust one another. To say we're going to try this, and if this isn't working, we're going to try plan B. We're going to pivot together, accept responsibility that we're going to make mistakes along the way, the same way our ancestors did with the golden calf. This is the gift of Vayakhel today. We're going to move into our mindfulness meditation practice together. Really focusing on this concept of hakarat hatov, of gratitude, of appreciative joy, to help with our joy deficit, to let us know that we're going to be present, that we have been given another day, not because we have to, right? Not because we have to get up and have to, right? But what are we trying to say? We've been given another opportunity. Baruch Hashem, thank you. We can get up and act on the behalf of those who can't. So let's take some moments together to settle into a posture of balance, some stillness, of groundedness. Whatever you need to do, if you're in any really discomfort in the low back, any pain, don't sit. Stand up with a strong mountain pose or walk back and forth in a walking meditation, not walking anywhere in particular, or even lying down. Just keep your eyes open if you have sight so that you don't fall asleep. If you're like me, you're going to be at the edge of your seat, the feet on the ground, really grounded, held by Mother Earth, sitting up so straight and tall, full of dignity because you are created in the image and likeness of the divine. What a gift. What a bracha. What a blessing. Close your eyes if you feel safe and comfortable. If you don't, keep them open. Just lower your gaze. Know that you can always look around the room and know that you are safe right now. You're here with me and others from all over the world about to enter this meditation together. So we're moving into a posture of balance, stillness, and groundedness. Letting your hands rest where it's comfortable. We'll begin with a deep inhalation. Exhale. Oh. The gift of oxygen, the gift of the shoulders raising and lowering down. Inhalation. Exhale. Feeling that oxygen flow through the nose, the throat, down into the lungs, expanding the belly. Inhalation. And let go. Letting your breath fall to its own natural rhythm. Really inviting yourself here like you would your best friend, like you would your dog or your cat. Come join me for that warm lap. You're going to be grounded, still. Balance, that centeredness, that gift from God. With each exhalation, a sense of releasing. Breathing out the busyness, the agitations. The fullness of the mind. To be here, right here and right now, no other place to be. To befriend the body, to befriend the mind at this moment. Exploring what it is to cultivate quality of contentment, of sufficiency. to be able to ask of yourself what in this moment is truly lacking, and then honoring that answer. Honoring that we carry the lack of our people safe at home who are held captive. Honoring our sons and daughters who are serving in Gaza and in the north who are not home. A real lack there. So honoring that, no need to pretend it's not there, because it is. To all the Jews in the diaspora and all of our allies, honoring the lack of safety, feeling at home in your countries, in your skin, with all the Jew hatred. Honoring what is lacking. And the big A and D, and, or in Hebrew, ve, appreciating the aliveness of this moment, of the body breathing. Appreciating our capacity to cultivate a mind that is a friend, that is a soldier, to a gatekeeper that we know will protect us, that's out for our best interests. Appreciating this moment of refuge, of resting together, of quietude, this moment of stilling. And recalling, bringing into this moment a recollection. We just called this Shabbat, Shabbat Zachor, the one of remembrance, of remembering, of recollecting. And right now we're remembering a moment, perhaps today at Purim, in our day-to-day life, or in the recent past, where we felt a mind of gladness, a heart of joy. Perhaps this was in meeting a loved one. Perhaps this was looking at the children in their costumes. Perhaps this was the neighbor coming by with a mishloach manot for Purim. Appreciating the support of community, of taking refuge together, taking refuge in God, and then the teachings of the Torah, of the Dharma, of Musar mindfulness. And just as much as you can right now, recalling this simple moment when you felt your heart trembling in the face of the lovely, of the delightful. That's what I had today with my vulnerability, with my deep sadness about those who couldn't be with us, probably don't even know it's Purim. And the delight of seeing these kids and their costumes and the giggles and the candy and the joy of Purim. So how do you know this gladness, this joyfulness in the body and in the heart? Appreciating the efforts, the sincerity, the intentionality that you bring to walking this path together in kindness, compassion, wakefulness, and joy. Forgiving the moments you stumble, the moments of forgetfulness, grateful to God to command us to remember, lest we forget. appreciating the sincerity of our own dedication and commitment. Aware of the felt sense of joy in the body, the smile in the heart. Widening your field of awareness just to recall, reflect on the many people in today or in any single day that help us to navigate our way through life. Those we know and that we don't know. The gladness, the joy of appreciation. Recalling to mind the people we love and care for. The people who care for us. Appreciating the joy, the safety, the trust, the nourishment found in the shared caring. Allowing that to gladden your heart right now. Appreciating the taste of joy, allowing yourself to have it. Appreciating the many people who come and go in our world, some we don't know, some longing for happiness and peace. Being able to turn toward the people in our lives and our among our people and our nation. Even those we struggle with that maybe we don't know, and also whom we love. And offering all of them these simple wishes. Repeat after me quietly. May our joy deepen. May our gladness be at hand. May we be fully present in the midst of all things, with the 10,000 sorrows and the 10,000 joys. May we find joy in the midst of all of this. Exploring what it is that you can offer, the most simple but profound gesture of care and appreciation to others, perhaps tomorrow during Purim, during the day, wondering in the delight of our being and their being, that they're here and they've been given another day to bring God's good to this world, appreciating that we are here. Allowing that joy and gladness to spread through the body right now. Spread through the mind, through the hearts and the soul. Appreciating the joy of our collected Om, our collected people, of a collected heart, the joy of this stillness together. Sensing our capacity to not only cultivate this simple joy in the midst of the difficulty, in the midst of ill will and contractedness, we are able to be in the shadow of God with the shadow self. Still, one foot in front of the other, like Batsaev, gaining strength from the generosity of our collected Am, of everyone stepping up to serve so that we are given another day. Calming the surges of comparative mind, of wanting, of not wanting, of aversion. knowing that in this moment, right here and right now, where we are practicing together, there is enough kindness, compassion, and wakefulness. We will take the next minute in silence, and I will ring the bells when it is time for us to come out of our shared meditation, knowing this capacity to illuminate the moments with sensitivity and appreciation, this capacity to develop a heart that can tremble in the face of the lovely and the terrible. If you have your eyes closed, gently and slowly open them, allowing the light to filter back in. So it's not such a shock to join us if you're here on the sacred Zoom screen together. God bless you. Thank you for joining today. Thank you to Hashem, to God, for bringing us to this moment. Thank you to our ancestors for these teachings and passed down to us. May I be a vessel to continue to offer this to you. Thank you for entrusting in me and the Institute for Holiness, Mahon LeKedusha, Kehilat Musar Mindfulness. Thank you for your practice. Delighted to be with you today. We will move to Pekudei, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow evening. And then Vayikra. Thank you for your patience and understanding, and wishing you Purim Sameach, a happy one, an appreciative joy, being able to be with the joy and the sorrow, holding both. God bless you.